AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Brett Proof, I'm the luckiest man that's ever lived. You know why?
Why is that?
Four times in the last month or so, I've had to go to 50th in France. I found street parking immediately, right in front of the building I needed to go into.
Ta-da! Very lucky.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you're welcome.
Always nice to park in front of fire hydrants.
Yes, it is. Shh, don't say anything. No, I park legally. Thank you very much. And my beautiful Toyota Sienna from Rudy Luther Toyota Son, or Rudy Luther Toyota, I should say, over on 394-169. Get yours today. I don't know if that's why I get to park easy every time I go to 50th in France, but it doesn't hurt. I'm at least having comfort, huh? We have got a lot to get to today, and starting off with our first guest, Brianna Beersbach is the exceptional political writer for MinnPost, and she is kind enough to join us today to talk about some of her latest stories. Hi, Brianna.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going very well. Oh, well, it's going very well for us. It's not going to go too well for Rod Hamilton currently. I want to start off with that because we talked about that on the show yesterday. And there was – but I actually want to go back to Tuesday's show. On Tuesday's show, if you go back and listen to it, I actually talk about, wow, finally the Minnesota Republicans in the House are taking sexual harassment seriously. They seem to get these rules. They're getting these rules passed. There's this new bill that Pepin and Housley and the Senate are championing about making it easier for women to report sexual harassment and file charges against sexual harassment, sexual assault. You know, wow, okay, finally. I mean, they were dragging their heels for a while, but there we go. And I said, I only hope that while the Republicans were dragging their heels ever since Tony Cornish left the House last year, that there haven't been any other cases of sexual assault, sexual harassment reported. And then we have what came out. I think it was Wednesday night as the story first came on out about Representative Rod Hamilton. That case, it really does at this point, even after 24 hours, it does seem like it's really more of a he said, she said sort of situation. At least that's what Ramsey County seemed to be insisting as far as whether they would be able to press charges.
Yeah, I think the Ramsey County attorney is saying in terms of a criminal case, what is there isn't a criminal charge. You know, she did file the report, the young woman who did, and she said there was no for it to actually go slip into a criminal charge. It would have to have been touching of intimate parts. She said that did not happen, but she was also clear that what happened was not consented by her and made her incredibly uncomfortable, which she did make clear apparently in text messages after the incident to the representative.
And we want to be very clear, allegations. These are allegations, but there does seem to be some decisions that were made by Representative Hamilton, which raise an eyebrow or two, to say the least. And once again, it's allegations. They're not saying there's charges to be filed, but it, you know, whether or not we want to, you know, any comparisons we can put to Schoen or to Cornish last year, there seems to have been some poor judgment, which is not helping his case.
Yeah, there's definitely some things everyone agrees on, including the representative in terms of what happened. I mean, certainly he met this young woman, and he admitted he did invite her to his apartment near the Capitol, you know, because there was a snowstorm. Some of the touching he acknowledges happened, but he said it was in a non-sexual way, according to his statements. She said she felt they were, and she was very uncomfortable. And she said she was also very clear that she's a survivor of sexual assault, that she was clear that touching like that made her uncomfortable since her assault. So there are some things already that are pretty clear and all parties seem to agree on that are inappropriate enough where their House is launching an investigation regardless of whether there are any kind of criminal charges that are going to be filed. So this is going to be something that is looked into. And in terms of parallels to what happened last year with Representative Cornish and former Senator Schoen, you see some similarities. I mean, this young woman was not a staffer at the Capitol. She was someone who interacted with the legislator through, you know, her advocacy or her work or campaigns like so many people do. And that was the same thing with Cornish. You know, his main allegations were coming from a lobbyist, and Schoen's main allegations came from someone on the campaign trail. So it really shows that people coming in contact with legislators are potentially vulnerable to assault, harassment, or at least incredibly uncomfortable behavior, and also the power dynamics at play. You know, this young woman was here talking about an issue, a new sexual violence center in Bemidji, and a legislator had power over that issue. So there's some of the same dynamics at play that you saw in those other cases as well.
One of the things I pointed out to the rules changes that were being put into place was one thing I really liked was this idea that no, just because you're not in the House or this, you know, the House Rules Committee is in the Minnesota House on the Capitol grounds, that your job does indeed carry over into the rest of your life. So you can't, you know, this is not something where you can just separate behavior like this, that is something that carries over. And that's, as you were just talking about here, I mean, I think that's something that's needed in any kind of sexual harassment policy. I mean, and this is not specifically to the politicians. I think anytime you have a salesman who's constantly on the road doing sales calls or something of that nature, I mean, you do have to have a sexual harassment policy which encompasses the scope of the job that's being applied to.
Yeah, most employers do. And I think that was something they heard in the committee. They had the House formed a subcommittee on workplace safety, and that's something they heard, that policies are generally, for private employers, more robust than what the House policy does. It does include the fact that there might be people that your employees are working with that don't necessarily work for you, and how do you handle those situations as well. And the new policy does lay out, while the House can't necessarily compel third parties to come forward and testify or even give any information in terms of an investigation, they are saying in clear language in the policy now that they will investigate those incidents, both if a legislator is alleged to harassing someone who is a third party, or if a third party is alleged to have harassed, say, a legislator or someone else who works in the building. Those are now clearly outlined in the policy as something that they are going to investigate if they can, and to the best of their ability. And they also include incidents that happen outside of the Capitol complex. That was another thing I heard a lot about, is that a lot of times these things don't just happen, you know, in the halls of the Capitol. There's conferences that legislators go to. There's meetings they have outside, you know, just outside of the Capitol. That's what this was as well. So now it does explicitly cover any incidents outside of the Capitol that still directly deal with legislative business.
Brianna Beersbach from InPost joining us. Let's bring up a big part of this. At least for me, there are some questions here. And that is, we've had Melissa Hortman, the minority leader, on a few times talking, and she has been very vocal that I do not know why this is taking so long. That is why on Friday, and you actually have the article on MinPost from last Friday about the Pepin-Housley bill, the Pepin in the House, Housley in the Senate, putting forward a change in verbiage, which basically would make it easier for women to file charges of sexual assault, sexual harassment, which is, I think, a good bill. And then you have these rules, which there were some heel dragging going on this, that there wasn't moving ahead, and all of a sudden, shazam, it was, you know, light speed. All of a sudden, these rules are getting approved. This incident with Hamilton happened the weekend of the blizzard, so it was almost 2 weeks ago. And, you know, so I guess the question I have is, when did the Minnesota GOP, at least House leaders, do you have any idea when they became aware of this situation? Because it sure would make a lot of sense with their sudden urgency to deal with this issue after dragging their heels for so long that they were aware that there was another case coming down, another allegation coming down, and henceforth the visuals on this were going to look horrific. So that's what really pushed them to get this stuff done.
You know, I think it's unclear. You know, leaders weren't incredibly available yesterday, but I know in other reports I've read, it sounds like maybe Representative Hamilton knew there was a police report filed, but wasn't necessarily communicating that with leaders. So it's unclear how much they knew and before these other wheels were sort of already turning on the sexual harassment issue. It's possible it could have triggered a much quicker action on it. But you know, it's really unclear at this point. We don't know when Representative Hamilton heard about the reports, and we know that he was approached by reporters earlier this week, but we don't know when he alerted anyone on staff about that. And because he won't answer questions at this point, he's on the vice of counsel is not responding to any more questions. He just released a single statement about it. And leaders are being sort of quiet about it, too. There's a lot of unknowns, I think, at this point.
And I'll admit the following statement is very speculative, but this is a woman, as you described, is an advocate on the Capitol. The chances that she could have, after that incident, gone and talked to someone else, whether that was Democratic leadership or Republican leadership, we don't know. But, I mean, there was a behavioral change here by the Republicans in the House where all of a sudden this issue seemed to get being pushed back, and then all of a sudden was – you know, there was really an effort to get this out, especially before Wednesday, before I think it was Kara Levin came out with the first story on Hamilton. And of course, the Star Tribune had their longer story yesterday. But, I mean, it does seem there was a dramatic change of some sort. Have you – when you talk to – I don't know who you talk to exactly, but when you talk to the Republican leaders about the bill that was going to change the verbiage, did you get any hint that there was anything more than that there was a motivation behind that, or was it just something – I mean, it's a good bill. I'll be the first to say that bill's changing those changing those federal words to where it makes it easier for women to be able to charge on sexual assault, sexual harassment is a good thing. But I was wondering if you – what was – did you get any idea what the motivation directly behind the sponsors was?
I believe that actually came out of the workplace committee. There was a testifier who spoke to this a few weeks earlier on specifically the issue and the challenge that the language had made. And I'd spoken to that testifier separately after I'd kind of heard about the bill a little bit early, but okay. I had known for weeks that they had something in the works as well, just because I was following that issue. So I think that one did come directly out of the committee and testimony process.
The rules, though, did come through all of a sudden as they were getting stalled, it seemed. All of a sudden they got passed. There was some people, when you talked about the sexual harassment rules, Democrats wanted more citizens involved. The Republicans were against that. And then your own story does talk as well a little bit about, the public visuals. Will they be able to be – will there be the ability to see transparency in this committee? And it doesn't sound like there's going to be the transparency definitely some people do want. Where do you think this lies? Is this something that is evolving, or is this a hope that the Minnesota GOP in the House can just get this bill passed for the time being and be done with it for now?
Well, there was part of the rules, the changing to the House policy, a resolution to create an interim task force. So that is something that has already been passed and has to meet at least once before December. And they have some things that they're already scheduled to work on before that time, which is creating a tip line, a phone and an email tip line about sexual harassment cases. If people don't know how to report or want to anonymously report, that's something they can do. They're also going to do a community survey similar to what the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission puts out on sort of the culture of the Capitol and issues and what can be improved. And they're also going to create a dedicated webpage on the policy and who can be reported to, and probably link to this new reporting portal as well. So those are some things that they're going to keep the conversation going on. You know, I don't know how much more they'll get into some of the issues that were left were not included in the policy, particularly the transparency issue, which there is really none in this new policy. It doesn't include any kind of public reporting or any point in the process where the public could get more information unless it rises to an ethics investigation or in the ethics committee, which is already the process now. So that could be part of the conversation. The legislature is always reluctant to make itself more publicly accountable and definitely reluctant to subject themselves to the Data Practices Act. So, I'm always hopeful that they will consider these things. They just ultimately never do. So that could be part of the discussion and potentially some other, you know, depending on how this Hamilton case goes, they might have some real examples on what might even need to already be improved in the House policy. Maybe the timing piece. I mean, that was something Democrats and Republicans had wanted. Representative Marianne O'Neill and John Lesch authored a proposal that required 30 days to look in and make some kind of, you know, determination, is there probable cause or not, and then move forward from there. That gave it actually some kind of a window where, as of now, there really was no timeline on these kind of investigations. So that could be part of the discussion as well.
All right. And by the way, one thing I should mention is Hamilton, who was the chair of the House Agricultural Finance Committee, I believe it was, he has been stripped of that chairmanship, correct?
He He has. That's also what happened with Representative Cornish as well.
Moving on to you and I, how many times have we talked about transparency at the Capitol? How about the other issue you and I have talked about? This has been the recurring theme for us for 4 years now. Last week, Minnesota Supreme Court declined to overturn a January ruling from the state appeals court that sex offender Kirk Fuchsleth no longer needed inpatient treatment for a sexual psychotic disorder and approved him for unconditional release. You and I have been talking about this for a while. Like I said, we have the courts now basically ordering the state to release people from the sexual offender treatment program, and the state legislature and the governor want nothing to do with that, even though they're being ordered directly by the courts to do so.
Yeah, it's a familiar situation. They were in it a few years ago, obviously, with a federal court judge ruling the program unconstitutional because it detained people indefinitely without really any signs of progress in terms of treatment and things like that, and rarely had ever let anyone out. This is a sort of different scenario, but still kind of the same result. The Court of Appeals really strictly and narrowly read a line of statute that said after people can be released after inpatient treatment, and that meant that this offender could be released immediately upon their reading of the statute. That is not how the state's been interpreting it, or other courts have. They've been interpreting it that there is another step that is often used called provisional discharge. So you're not just immediately discharged without any guidance or any kind of supervision from your treatment. You can have a provisional discharge first where you're in the community, maybe in a group home, but you're still wearing an ankle bracelet or you're being monitored by someone until you're ready for full release. Mm-hmm. The state just wanted to clarify that provisional discharge piece is still something they can use. So they acted very quickly this week. The Senate passed a bill unanimously. And I assume the House will be doing something similar very soon.
It comes back to what you and I have talked about, is that if they want to make this a life sentence, they have to pass the laws in the Congress that basically outline the sentencing guidelines for these crimes. And it's a after the fact situation, and you know, no one is really necessarily wanting to have people who are susceptible to violate others released upon the public. But at the same time, there you are getting more and more of these cases, and as you've talked about, it's not just here, it's everywhere really, where you have these people who are given a 10-year, 15-year term, and it's turning into a 30, 40-year term with no chance of ever being able to be released into the public. And it does present an interesting case, because eventually this is all going to come undone, because you can't just retroactively keep sentencing people for a crime. If you wanted to do that, you had to do it on the front end.
Absolutely. They're technically civilly committed to the program, and they're there as treatment because a lot of the people in the program have already completed their prison sentence. This was created as a way to act as a step down before they're released into society if they're determined to still be potentially dangerous. And there are more than 700 people in the sex offender program of varying degrees, I think, of danger. Some very serious serial pedophiles and rapists who will probably never, ever be properly evaluated to be released from the program because they aren't safe to. Mm-hmm. But there are others in the program who kind of got wrapped into this whole wrap of it, who is particularly people with only juvenile offenses. Those are people who, when they're maybe 10 years old, had an offense, went into juvenile programs, and then on their 19th birthday were committed to MSOP and have been there ever since. And their recidivism rates are very low, but still they're kind of lumped into this big, very scary program in Minnesota, and rarely being let out. So I think that the court cases have really shook up the state in terms of saying we need to reevaluate all the people in the program, and letting some people go move into provisional discharge, and not just keeping everyone here indefinitely, because it really did raise serious constitutional questions.
Well, and you've always said, there are definitively people that should never be released from these programs. They have really serious issues. But, too, as well, you brought up the point is, we do actually have a lot of laws on the books about sex offenders within society, whether, registering with police, mm-hmm. Community notice, the where they can live in proximity to others. There are already a lot of rules. It seems as if there's a reluctance. I mean, and I get it. There are some places where a person gets released and they immediately commit a crime, and that, you know, that really is bad. But there almost seems to be a hesitancy that when you have, as you described, some of these people who have, you know, the chance of returning to the crime is very low. There's a reluctance to even try out the societal monitoring that we do have in place outside of a correctional facility or program because of fear that it might not work.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the first 20 years of the program, no one was ever released, so no one had ever taken that first step to see how it would go. Mm-hmm. And especially when you look back at 2003, the murder of Drew Shodin, that was by a level 3 sex offender who's released from prison and not committed to the program. And a lot of people asked, you know, why wasn't he committed? He was obviously dangerous. And you noticed, I've looked into the data on this, commitment to the program spiked dramatically after that happened. You know, no one wanted to potentially let go the person who could do something as horrific as what happened to Drew. And I think that in that process, they probably caught some people who weren't getting caught before, and making sure they went through treatment, but they caught a whole lot of other people as well. And sort of the fear and the response to that crime that really captured the entire country's attention when it was going on.
I really think at some point you should write a book about this, because I think it's a little wonkish, but it is a fascinating story about how we as society second guess ourselves. And once again, still to my knowledge, legislatures are not putting in the rules that and the penalties for crimes at the level they should be to make sure from this point forward they don't have that problem. And so this is going to be an issue that's going to confront us for decades to come.
Oh, absolutely. And another issue that's coming up is, you mentioned we're putting a lot of laws up about where sex offenders can live. I mean, as more people are being released from these programs, the local communities are drawing big circles around themselves to say you can't live anywhere near anywhere in my community. That is putting a high concentration of sex offenders in certain neighborhoods in North Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park. And they're saying, what if we drew circles around our community as well? So the more cities do this, there could potentially be a lawsuit as well, because the state runs into a situation where they can't put someone anywhere. There was actually a case where a sex offender, a black man, was put into a predominantly white community, and he was very easily targeted as this person, this new person. And it made it very hard for him to kind of go back into some kind of semblance of a normal life, because it was very easy to target in this small, close-knit community where he was the only black man living there. So that's something that I think it really makes it challenging in terms of trying to help people actually get back on their feet when you have so many parts of the state where they can't actually live. So that's going to be something that could potentially come to the courts as well. I think that's right for a lawsuit in the next year.
The one that always fascinates me is one that happened to me, where there was a sex offender that was released, and their family lived in the neighborhood nearby us, and they basically can't stop the person moving in with family. And so it's going to become interesting when you get one of those communities that has those big red circles around them. They can't stop that person moving into that red circle if there's a family member in there. And that would be my guess is where the next big lawsuit's going to be, is whether or not a community has a right to tell a family that's a homeowner whether or not a member of that family can stay in the family residence. You know, that's one that I think is going to come to a head at some point.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, I think that would be, especially say they live near a daycare or school or some of these targeted areas where there's a lot of concern about that.
Brianna, I want to mention everyone. She's been on with us, I think it was four and a half years now, and you've been fantastic. You are leaving MinnPost. You've got a great new gig coming your way, correct?
Yeah, I'm heading to NPR on May 14th. I'm excited.
You are excited. When I heard that you were leaving for a job, I'm not joking when I said this, and Brett agrees with me here too. We both thought it was like, New York Times or something like that. You are that good of a journalist. I have you on not because of any bias. I have you on because you are one of the best journalists I've ever had the pleasure of chatting with, and I think you're just sensational. I know the likelihood we'll chat anytime soon is pretty unlikely, but I do hope that at some point in the future you and I can revisit again. I'd love that.
Absolutely, and thanks for having me on all these years. It's been great to chat with you.
It's been my pleasure, absolutely my pleasure. Spotlight this one. Brianna Bierschbach from MinnPost, kind enough to join us today. We'll link all of her stories online as well a little bit later on. Thanks, Brianna. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
It's here. Kohl's lowest prices of the season. Prices so low, no coupons needed. Women's tees, just $4.99. Men's polos, just $8.99. Kids' jumping beans tops and bottoms, just $6. The Big One bath towel is only $2.99. And select kitchen electrics are just $4.99 after mail-in rebate. Plus, get Kohl's cash, $10 for every $50 spent. And Yes to You members earn double points. Right now at Kohl's. Select styles. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
Now through September 1st at the Museum of Russian Art is an exhibition of Minneapolis-based painter Leon Husha. The Art of Leon Husha, Balancing Act, showcases more than 50 pieces from 29 different collectors in the largest show ever of his bold and colorful work. A hometown favorite, the energy of Leon's playful art spans sculptures, paintings, and non-traditional media. See for yourself today and bring home a signed print or exhibition catalog from the museum store. For details, visit tmora.org.
With spring, it's car wash season. Thank goodness for the Luther Advantage program from Rudy Luther Toyota. Not only do I save 10 cents off per gallon of gas at holiday station stores, but I also get big discounts on car washes. And with free 2 years of maintenance with every new Toyota purchased, I can get my oil change and spring service done with the best service and maintenance department at Rudy Luther Toyota. Clear your spring checklist with great service from Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169.
I'm Richard R.J. Eskow, and this week on The Zero Hour, who is Jordan Peterson? Collusion in the world's central banks, workers' Memorial Day, and who really elected Donald Trump? Hint, it wasn't Russia. All this and more on The Zero Hour, every Sunday night from 9 till midnight on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
This spring, the early bird gets more than the worm. They'll also get triple savings from Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. That's right, you can triple your savings in April when you purchase a new furnace and air conditioner. Go for the HVAC hat trick by saving up to $900 three times. Take advantage of utility rebates, manufacturer rebates, and April savings. April is the only month Standard Heating is offering the HVAC hat trick triple savings, so don't wait. Details at standardheatingdeals.com. Some restrictions apply. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, the comfort you deserve.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Brianna Beerspach. Once again, I'm going to miss her greatly. She is fantastic, and she's one of the best journalists I've ever seen. NPR's gain, for sure. And my guess is, I'm going to say within 5 years, she'll be talking to us from a national outlet, if we do ever, if she remembers who we are. Matt who? Oh, that's right. Brett even does that three or four times. Right, Brett?
Who are you again?
Exactly. That's all. It's called putting the ball in the tee and swinging away. The Hamilton story, clearly the Republicans, and this is, if you want to be critical of something that they have done, is they should have, like, and we said this, and Melissa Hortman said this on the air, is, you know, what is taking you so long? And when their first report was, you know, the feeling that victim shaming was part of it, that, you know, the victim has to acknowledge their role in the situation. You know, no, that's not the case. You know, you can't, you have to understand that you can't go on out there and say the victim is, you know, if you're there at the Capitol to advocate for a sexual harassment center in Bemidji, you have a right to be at the Capitol building and not be hit on, not be, you know, flirted with, not be touched. And that goes for anywhere, for goodness sakes. I mean, I've already said my piece about the fact that I never comprehended how bad this problem was. And then now I've realized it's like, dear Lord, I mean, there's just, you know, what is wrong with some of you guys that you feel as if that this is acceptable? Now, once again, the allegations against Hamilton, whether or not he sustains this and stays in the House, I don't know. What I will say is this, is that if the House leaders would have dealt with this issue a lot quicker after Cornish, then maybe I wouldn't be so critical of them today. But we have to ask the question, did the Republicans' ham-handed response on this lead to a culture that, you know, was ripe for this kind of behavior? And that's not saying – I'm not saying directly to Hamilton, but, I mean, they clearly did not send the message that they were taking this seriously. And so did that – you know, is that creating an environment that, well, they're not going to take it seriously, so why should I take it seriously? That's a question they'll have to answer. But right now, as you hear a lot of Republican leaders do not have time to talk to anyone right now because they're terrified. Hold on, Julie. I'll get your call after the break. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Karen Housley, by the way, interesting interview she had. I'll talk about that when we come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
The Spring St. Paul Art Crawl, presented by the St. Paul Art Collective, will be running April 27th, 28th, and 29th. This is a must-do experience that you will love. Over the weekend, you'll have the chance to explore a wide variety of art while touring through local artist studios, lofts, and galleries. Hosting over 350 artists, up for purchase will be paintings, photography, pottery, sculpture, fiber arts, and more. The Art Crawl sprawls over 34 locations. Join the Art Crawl and discover outstanding art for you to own. When you buy local art, you're providing to artists so that they may continue to create the art we love. The Metro Transit is supporting the local art community with free transit passes. Download your pass to ride buses and light rail for free during the Art Crawl. Be sure to get details at the stpaulartcrawl.org. That's the stpaulartcrawl.org.
Oh no, you shattered your cell phone. Now what? Listen closely. We know you're lost without your phone. Bring it to Computer Revolution today. We'll fix it and have you back online before someone asks, "Where are you?" Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair has over 18 years experience fixing computer devices, all brands, all carriers. Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair, located in Roseville at Highway 36 and Fairview Avenue, or call 651-633-6600. We fix phones, same day, 7 days a week.
Hey, podcast fans. Did you know that StandUpRecords.com has live comedy CDs of some of your favorite podcast personalities? Folks like Jackie Cation of The Dork Forest, Robert Kelly of You Know What Dude, the Sklar Brothers from Sklarbro Country, Doug Stanhope from Doug Stanhope's Podcast, and Mark Maron from WTF. You've heard them for free. Why not consider spending some money to find out what they do for a living? Just head on over to StandUpRecords.com or look for Stand Up Records at Amazon.com or the iTunes Music Store. That's StandUpRecords.com.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly cloudy skies today with a high near 60. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 34. Saturday, sunny with a high near 57. And Sunday, sunny with a high around 69. Support local art by going to the St. Paul Art Crawl this weekend. Come enjoy live music, guided tours, artist demonstrations, and artist talks as you crawl around St. Paul. The St. Paul Art Crawl is your chance to meet and engage with local talented artists. More details, including free transit passes, at stpaulartcrawl.org.
AM 950. I'm usually crawling around St. Paul, but this time it's for art. And make sure you, the Art Crawl is fantastic. If you get a chance to get over to St. Paul, enjoy that. It is, the arts in this town are amazing. They really are. So get a chance to go out there and enjoy that this weekend. Also get a chance to go out and enjoy the eatlocalminnesota.com restaurant of the week, Great Wall, which is over 45th and Franson in Edina. Fantastic Chinese food, Szechuan Peking dishes, the hot and sour soup, great dumplings. Oh, fantastic. Stop on by, enjoy their food. And they have, of course, their full menu to go. So you can call ahead and pick up the Great Wall. It's eatlocalminnesota.com restaurant of the week. Go and enjoy. Julie is in Minneapolis and has been kind enough to hold. Welcome on in, Julie.
Hi, I just had a couple quick questions. And I want to say I'm not being snarky or sarcastic. I'm really wondering. I was thinking about encouraging my niece, who's a sophomore in college, you know, to tell her about, you know, how beautiful the Capitol is. They redecorated, put a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm wondering, do I really want to encourage her to visit? So I'm wondering if these rules against sexual harassment are going to cover members of the public, you know, ordinary Minnesotans, be they girls in high school classes or be they, you know, grown women or males as far as that goes. Do they cover members of the public or is it just people that work for the legislature or work as a lobbyist? Do you know specifically what these, whether or not they're going to follow the rules, that's another matter. But do you know specifically what these rules were, will or are covering for the general public?
Well, first of all, I want to say this. Julie, what you point out here is a problem of the Republican Party's own creation. The fact that people say, is it safe for my daughter to go to the state capitol? And that's a that's an interesting point. From my understanding, all government employees, that includes all politicians, their behavior is closely monitored, and truly that covers anything in the Capitol building. As once again, as I mentioned with Brianna, one of the things I like about this bill is like these rules changes is that they go beyond that. That if you're out campaigning or if you're at a fundraiser, those apply for the politicians as well. But anything at the Capitol is now going to be covered under this new policy specifically. And once again, this is the House Rules Committee, so this is the House rules making it this up. Obviously, Senate rules and the Supreme Court, I imagine, will have to have their own rules as well because they're in the same building. But that's the change for them.
The House.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah, because before it was just, it didn't cover, for instance, lobbyists, and some of the women that lodged complaints had been lobbyists. It just covered people that, I guess, worked in the Capitol. So I'm glad to know the rules have expanded. Hopefully they will follow the rules, but we'll just have to see. But like I said, I wasn't trying to be sarcastic. I was just trying to get information.
No, you were asking a legit question.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Julie. It's a legit question. If there was a fraternity over at the U of M and that fraternity was having repeated problems with sexual assault, sexual harassment going on, it's a fair question to say, should my daughter go to that fraternity house if there's a party on a Friday night? That's a legit question. This isn't one case. I mean, put together, we have three cases, one Senate case, two House cases, that regardless of party, this is not a party politics thing. It is not. It should be a common sense human thing, and these laws get passed. But the fact is that the Republicans, after Cornish, drug their heels. There was it seemed that there was some victim blaming going on from the initial person that came on in to do a talk. I've often said, and we had Melissa Horman on the air saying, what is taking you guys so damn long? Well, I mean, she didn't say it like that. I said it like that. But Melissa Horman came on saying it's inexcusable that this was taking as long as it was to get this in done. You've created your, like I said, there's a reason without a doubt in my mind. And Brianna's a journalist, and so her integrity is intact. Mine, come on. Without a doubt in my mind, last week, the Republicans must have got wind that there was a possible another case going on that they didn't quite know what it was, but very quietly they, whether or not, I mean, and Brianna, I trust Brianna. So her saying the Housley-Pepin bill about rewording the language around sexual harassment, sexual assault to help women, that bill was in the works for a while. But I believe that bill was probably rushed faster to make it seem like, look, we're taking this issue on head first. And then, like I said, on Tuesday, I was like, wow, look, you guys are finally pulling your heads out of your caboose and getting this done. Good for you. Good for you. Now we know why. Now we know exactly why. 952-946-6205. Should mention, speaking of Karen Housley, Minnesota State Senator Karen Housley, a Republican, has some odd opinions about legislation intended to help women. Now, she is running, obviously, against Tina Smith in the election coming up this fall here. She was first elected to the state senate in 2012. After discussing, and she was on a local podcast called Womankind. After discussing the recent Me Too movement, the Womankind host asked Housley if there was anything she's doing to advocate for women. She brought up a recent Minnesota measure that created specialized license plates for female veterans. I believe that when you start doing that, you make us look weaker. I believe if you're a young woman, if you're a woman veteran, you're a veteran, Housley said. She added that instead of creating laws to help women, we should be empowering women to be strong and independent. Okay. I think sometimes when we legislate to help women, we actually aren't helping them, Housley said. I think it's more what I like to do with women, especially when the younger girls come on in, is just really empower them to be strong and independent and not do it through laws. Okay, the point of laws getting passed is because they are strong and independent, but there's a system in place that prevents them from being strong and independent, so we have to pass laws that give them the equal footing. Really? Really? She said that education is also key, given that Minnesota has a lot of different cultures, including a large Somali population. I think that embracing their culture, yet educating them about our culture here is really important, and just living what you believe and being a strong, independent woman, I think is much more important than legislating anything to help women out. Housley did not immediately respond to Huffington Post's request for comments. Laws created to help women usually just do just that. Legislation such as the Violence Against Women Act and Title IX have helped women even on the playing field in schools and workplaces around the country and have established protections for domestic abuse and sexual harassment. Now, I don't know what Karen Housley's background is. I don't. And so for me to speak with any sort of authority over it is irresponsible. It really is. She is married to – is it Phil Housley, the NHL player? I believe it is. So we can make some observations that she probably lives in a fairly wealthy community, that she's not living check to check. She's a state senator, so she definitely is on the job. And considering the discussion we had about sexual assault and sexual harassment at the state capitol building, I would make an argument that just her there, we definitely do have laws that have been passed to help protect women. At least we're trying to now to prevent them from being sexually assaulted, sexually harassed. So are you saying that all this is pointless? That the House of Representatives shouldn't try to pass this bill because we just need to tell women to be strong and independent, and that's it, and nothing else? I want to take a quick point moment to really challenge her on the whole thing about, well, we have to have Somali women. I think they are embracing their culture, educating them about our culture is really important. To a point, I agree with that. But I also think it's very important for white, wealthy white culture to educate themselves about the Somali culture and the Latino culture and the Native American culture and the African American culture and the lower income culture. Because it's really easy to sit there and just say, be strong and independent. But until you walk a little ways in those people's shoes, it's not really – it's pretty flippant to sit there and just say, well, you were sexually harassed by your boss. That's why you got canned. That's why you can't get ahead. Well, be strong and independent. We're not going to write a law to make sure that you get paid the same paycheck. We're not going to do that. But you be strong and independent. Yeah, you. Really? Really? Wow. Like I said, I don't know your circumstances. You know, you might have had a lot of struggles coming up in life, and good for you. You've done pretty well for yourself. And even if you weren't a state senator, I will say this. Being in a marriage is a lot of work, and raising kids is a lot of work. And that is something that we do not give enough credit to on this planet. This is not about whether or not she has to prove herself. She's already has proven herself with her life. But this is about her talking authoritatively about others like that. You know, just, we don't need laws for you people. Just be strong and independent, which seems to go completely and totally against all the evidence that we have that being strong and independent in our society doesn't seem to be enough for women to stop getting groped, stop being harassed, stop getting paid less, stop having less opportunities. Come on. Really? Rich is in Lakeville. He wanted to chime in on Karen Housley. Welcome on in, Rich.
Yeah, good afternoon, Matt. Yeah, years back, Mrs. Housley wrote a book on the stock market, how to make money in the stock market. And that's when the market was booming, that anybody could make money in there. You know? And okay. then about a year or two after the book came out and all that stuff, the market crashed. We never heard another word out of her. You know, all of a sudden, no follow-up book or anything like that. But again, I believe she's been kind of riding her husband's coattails a little bit so far.
I will say, Rich, this. You know, and thanks for the phone call. I will say this. I'm not going to, you know, does the Housley name help out like the Dayton name helps out? Darn right it does. In a state where what was the lawsuit a few years ago where the person wanted to run is Johnson, and they wanted to like find their second cousin's last name. They wanted to list themselves on the ballot with a Jorgensen or something like that because they know the Yergi vote was out there.
Wasn't there another candidate that had the last name of like Awada or something, and then they went with Anderson instead?
Anderson, that's right. It was Anderson. Yergi. Who am I going to vote for today? I'm not going to say she wrote a book. She's a state senator. I'm not going to imply she's riding on anyone's coattails. But what I am going to say, and also, she was not the only person to write financial advice books at that time that ended up, whoa, I guess I'm out of business. But I will say this is more about this specific interview. You seem to be talking authoritatively about a lot of people that you clearly don't have the authority to talk about. I'm just going to say. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
It's time for spring cleaning. Wait, you weren't planning on getting your carpets cleaned this spring? Getting your carpets cleaned is not just about how your home looks. It's about your family's health with all the bacteria and allergens building up. That's why Zero Res uses their patented empowered water so you get a healthy and clean home without soapy, crunchy, dirt-attracting residue. This month, get 3 rooms Zero Resified, starting at $139. Plus, this month, save $50 when you get your air ducts Zero Res clean. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMN.com. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward, it spells the same.
No matter what your taste, you'll find the music you're looking for at the Electric Fetus. Pick from rock, pop, international, roots music, and so much more on CD and vinyl. Or create your own compilation of favorites with the exclusive Mix and Burn CD station, only available at the Electric Fetus. Dust off your vinyl or just make some space by turning your unwanted music into cash. The used selection changes daily, so check out the new arrivals often. 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
Visit the wine bar at Cafe Latte and enjoy a unique handcrafted pizza and glass of wine. The perfect place for an intimate night or an evening with friends. Choices range from spicy Italian sausage and sweet roasted peppers to the one-of-a-kind nacho chicken pizza layered with blue corn tortilla chips. The approachable wine list offers over 30 by the glass with special emphasis on wines from Washington State. End your night with one of Cafe Latte's melt-in-your-mouth desserts, 850 Grand Avenue, St. Paul.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug with Hidden Edges Radio on Sundays from 1 to 2 p.m. Join me this Sunday where I'll interview Woki Dabo of Project Blackboard, a nonprofit that's helping to recondition schools in Liberia. You'll love Woki's spirit and approach. You'll love her even more because she's got a full-time job in addition to running Project Blackboard. Wow, now that's someone with grit. Hidden Edges Radio, challenging, passionate, perspective-changing on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Tom Hartman here letting you know how you can go solar with All Energy Solar, even way up north in Minnesota. Lots of people ask them, isn't Minnesota too cloudy for solar? No. The truth? For one thing, Minneapolis gets nearly as much sun each year as Houston, Texas. But it isn't just about how much sun you get. It's also about having access to great local incentive programs that make solar affordable. Learn what your options are to save with solar and visit allenergysolar.com today.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett, you had a caller make a comment about what exactly?
Yeah, basically in Karen Housley's office, she was saying that she has a cardboard cutout of Phil Housley that people are supposed to pose with. So he was kind of disagreeing, saying that he doesn't use his coattails.
Oh, okay. Well, that's opportunistic. Is she charging for it? You know, I don't know. Well, I'm not going to say that. I will say I got Lori message me here. Zillow says Phil Housley's house is valued at nearly $1.8 million. It's a lot easier to be independent when you're rich. I also wonder if they have a Florida or other home. You know, that's my point is that, you know, it's if you're going to talk authoritatively about, well, you don't need laws. You just need to be strong and independent. Well, we all have different backgrounds. And once again, you're an author. I don't know if you've had any – what your struggles have been, Karen. You're married to an NHL hockey player, a former NHL hockey player. You are undeniably extremely wealthy. So you saying being strong and independent is fine for you. That you don't feel as if pay inequity laws need to be passed or Title IX needed to be passed or Violence Against Women Act needs to be passed. That's fine. But there's a heck of a lot of women who strongly disagree with you. Strongly disagree with you. As a father of two girls, can I just talk about Title IX, which is probably the most, you know, of all these bills, I mean, it has to deal with sports and opportunities for women at college levels. You know, it's not dealing with violence against women or unequitable pay. It's making sure women have the same opportunities as men do in athletics. I want to just say that bill alone is fantastic, and it gives my daughters the opportunities that when I was a kid and I was in school, girls didn't have the opportunity to play sports like they do today, if they so choose. It's really easy for you from a $1.8 million house to talk about you just need to buck up there, camper, and, you know, be strong and independent. It's another thing to go out and sit down with a low-income single mom who's got three jobs and trying to do it on her own, who is not getting any help from the government, is trying to do everything right, and yet runs into roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. She does not need you saying, hey, be strong and independent, okay? I think she trounces most people. That woman would trounce most people with their strength and their independence. What they need is a helping hand. And, oh, gee willikers, it'd sure be nice if someone, I don't know, in Senate could maybe write a bill to help them out with that, because that's what their job is. 952-946-6205. Their job is to write, if you're in the Senate, your job is to write bills to help the constituents. That's what I'm talking about. It's inexcusable, really, in my mind, for you to be saying, my job is not to help people, when that's exactly what your job is. And we can disagree. Yeah, I get it. We can disagree about what you think is helping people. But I can tell you right now, if your perspective is just, you know, screaming in young people's faces, be strong and independent, that's not helping. That's not helping. So the big story this weekend, Brett, do you have tickets to go see Infinity War?
I saw it last night, actually.
You did?
Yep.
Okay. I've got tickets for Saturday to go see it. You know, obviously a huge, huge movie that is going to be, I'm going to guess somewhere around $230, $240 million after this weekend.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Was it good?
Yeah, I especially like the Darth Vader cameo in it. See, spoiler.
No, there's no Darth Vader cameo.
Because I know people are paranoid about.
Well, no, we won't say this. I will say this. It's dark. I've heard – is that a fair statement?
I mean, I would say it's very much kind of the Empire Strikes Back of the Marvel
Universe
movies, yeah.
Empire Strikes Back's a phenomenal film.
It's that good, too, at least in my opinion.
In your opinion, it's that good?
Yeah.
Wow. Maddie happy. Maddie happy. Maddie, want to go now? Brett, you're going to take care of my kids tonight, okay? I'm going to go – when we're done here, just turn the mic on for Mackinney and you can go. Just take care of them, feed them food. There's stuff there. I'm going to go see this. I can't wait. I have tickets. I got tickets, so I got really good seats. I bought them like the first day they were available. I think we're at Southdale on Saturday night. Nice seats, reclining seats. 2.5 hours, though. I might have to, you know, purge my body of water for a few days. I'll have extra salt.
Yeah, you don't want to miss anything in it.
It really is that good.
Yeah, lots of callbacks to previous movies. So if you pay attention to the earlier movies, you'll get some big payoffs.
Oh, my God. I can't wait. I cannot wait. I will not spoil it for anyone on Monday.
But Darth Vader was not in it.
Darth Vader is not in this film. We'll be back on Monday. Mike's up next. Have a great weekend. Until Monday. See ya.